All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the NDL podcast. We are back for our fourth edition. We are going to recap weeks one and two, talk a little bit about three and four. But Jason, welcome back. How are you enjoying the first full week back on the NDL?
Enjoyed it one game, did not enjoy it so much the next. And I'm definitely not going to enjoy this week when I'm down 35-0 at the end of the first quarter to Ohio State.
I don't think it'll be that bad, but can I just get a little bit of credit here? My prediction for the Holme game, you and Holme, was pretty close.
Yeah, it was a good game. It was one of the better games of the week. I unfortunately threw two touchdown passes to the wrong team, which is never easy to overcome. was able to stage a fourth quarter comeback, but just couldn't get out of that hole. Always loved playing Holme. It was a fun game, but I have a 10 game win goal, and it's going to be very difficult to get at this point. But no, Ohio State will be up 35-0 at the end of the first quarter. All Daniel's got to do is hit spin move a couple times, and I'll be cooked.
Yeah, that'll be fun to watch the season unfold. I don't think you'll be down that much, but a lot to get to, a lot to talk about. Already some week three and four games in the books today. The guys are on top of it, but wanted to start off with a couple announcements, a few things that happened last week. We'll start with the bad news first. I think this happened while we were recording last week. We did have our first member get kicked out. I think the 35 rule, just so you guys are aware, like, it is non-negotiable. There is no excuses whatsoever. But wanted to just kind of address that and bring that up because it did happen. We hope it doesn't happen again. I think Shell broke it as well. He's lucky, though. He gets to stay. Yeah. But Jason, 35-point rule, anything to add?
I mean, it was ironic that while I'm going on a rant about don't do this, we have somebody doing it again. And credit to the Georgia Tech coach. You know, he broke the rule. He got punished. And he took it in stride. Not only did he take it in stride, you know, put out a news article stating that they were, you know, disciplining two members of their team for four games. So, you know, didn't run from it, didn't hide from it. But for somebody to turn around and immediately do it and then to, you know, say some of the things that he said in his defense and then go into the chat and like, well, my opponent was okay with it. No, your opponent's not okay with it. He might say he's okay with it. He's not having fun watching you run up the score and throwing the ball. So, yeah, it's the rule that cannot be broken. Stressed it last week, stress it again. Hopefully it's the last time we have to discuss it. But yeah, Shell breaking the rule and then going in and changing the score. We see you, Shell. We're on to you.
Yeah. We were going to bring him on as a guest and just berate him with, you know, hey, how does it feel to be just an absolute piece of crap breaking the rules? But we decided to hold off from that. we kid because we love.
Don't do that while I'm taking a drink of water.
Yeah. So just if there's a lesson to learn from all this, please, please, please read the announcements. I know they're long, but there's a lot of good things and a lot of things you don't want to miss in there. If you are tagged at coach in the Discord, read it. Take the extra 2-3 minutes and read through everything. Not that hard.
And Niddler's, Niddler's not spamming at coach for the fun of it.
Yes.
When he hits at coach, it's for a reason.
And I think funny guy of the league, Nick, always loves to just be upset every time there's an at coach. But don't be like Nick. Read everything. Well, hey, I want to actually end the announcement section here on a positive note. We got an agreement today from a couple coaches. We're going to give this a try on Tuesday night. So we had the opener, the kickoff classic, with everyone on stream watching. We have gotten two coaches to agree to stream a game of the week on Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. So that'll be 8 p.m. Central and then 7 p.m. Mountain Time, 6 p.m. for you guys out west. We will have Oregon taking on Oregon State in the Civil War. Should be a fun game. Talked to both coaches today. We're going to do a Manning cast for that game. I'll bring in some guests, some new coaches, some veteran coaches, and just have fun for an hour and watch the game together, talk about it. So feel free to join us. I don't even think I asked Jason if he's available Tuesday night. He might not be, but we'll have fun and make it happen. So really excited to do that, and hopefully that's something we can do on a weekly basis moving forward.
Yeah, I should be able to be available. We'll just have to see how things play out, but do my best to be there. Either way, it'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah, looking forward to it. So we'll get into week one and week two, talk about some recaps, reactions. Anything, Jason, for you stand out in that first block of games right off the bat?
I think the biggest one is the fact that Iowa can score points. I did not know this was possible. And you look, we talked about it last week. Their offense is not very good. Like their skill position players, they've got guys in the 70s. And, you know, 30-27 win over Louisiana, and then a 40-6 win over Iowa State for the Cy-Hawk Trophy. I didn't know Iowa State was allowed to score that many points. You know, 70 points is what they typically score during the Big 12 or the Big 10 season, much less over two games. So that was the first thing that stood out to me. And then I think the biggest surprise is Alabama. You know, losing to Notre Dame in the opener. Okay, it's Notre Dame. Losing at home 31-10 to UMass, Feinbaum's show probably wasn't very kind this week to our guy, U.S. Marine. Just saying.
Yeah, he's not going to be happy, because I think we did talk about it a little bit last week, too, of those two games. And to comment on Iowa, I was fortunate to get to play Iowa in group play of the Beefy Cup. You know, was a great game. He, you know, he's got 17 tight ends on the roster who are all like really good, and tight ends are pretty hard to cover, I'm learning, in this game. So I was fortunate to get out of there with a win. I think we were knotted up after three, but yeah, Iowa looking pretty solid. I think the first reaction I have is, hey, look out for these new guys. These new coaches are pretty good. We're seeing, you know, like you mentioned, UMass already. Liberty's looking pretty nice. And sorry, I don't have the names in front of me, but
Coastal Carolina.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just a lot of guys who probably been playing the game in the shadows for, the years. I say not this game, but, you know, Madden and other things like that. I think we have some new coaches who are going to be in the mix this season. So, yeah.
Plus when you're getting older, look, the hand-eye coordination goes down. The reactions are a little bit slower. You know, the eyesight goes, I've got all three of those issues right now. So, I mean, it's going to lend itself, you know, guys like VT Run and Gun, 0-1 start. You know, a lot of guys that have been really, really good players in the past having some struggles. Now you've got some old, you know, some vets like Big Mike and Shell who come out firing. You got Rain who's coming out firing, but yeah, I mean, we're going to see some of these newer coaches make a name for themselves, and it's hard to tell early on, you know, whether it's just they've got a better team than their opponents or whatnot. The other issue is, how are these guys going to do when they start playing each other in conference schedule? Because a lot of these guys have, you know, some of the group of five teams. Those are going to be some key battles. Will we get a war of attrition where we don't have an undefeated team, or will we have multiple? It's something that's going to be really interesting to see, especially with, you know, 12 teams making the college football playoff. We could have undefeated teams from multiple of these group of five conferences.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious. We'll probably learn more as the season goes on what that selection process looks like, aside from, you know, the four major conference champions plus the group of five highest ranked team. You know, so very, very wide open, really, for anybody. And I'm scrolling through week two looking at some games to refresh my memory. But
Coastal Carolina is the team that scares me. I mean, 61-28 mm-hmm. over Ole Miss, and then going on the road to North Carolina and winning 31-14. These aren't, you know, get by wins. These are dominant performances.
Yeah. And I think something that the conference commissioners were talking about a little bit is the scoring. You know, obviously a lot of inflated scores, a lot of, you know, I'm looking at 59-35 here, Cincinnati versus Pitt. On the other hand, I think this week we're already starting to see some 14-13 games, some 21-7 type games. So starting to see that stuff even out. You know, I think we don't want to make any rash decisions talking about rules and gameplay. I think we've found a pretty good in between, but I think that's one thing I noticed here these first couple of weeks was the non-conference games. We've got a lot of opponents who aren't familiar with each other, who have not played each other. And if they have played each other before, it's been 10 plus years that they've played this game against each other. So, you know, you're going to see some wonky scores. Just, again, don't win by 35 or more than 35, I should say. But what do you think of the scoring in the offense so far, Jason?
I think there's a couple factors to keep in mind with it. I think, first of all, the defense on this game is a huge learning curve. And we talked about it last week, especially with the hit stick. You really have to be cautious with how you go to tackle. I think a lot of guys are still learning the whole, you know, the X button to wrap up and things like that. I think you're also starting to see some people build custom playbooks for defense, which I think is vitally important because you can basically get every single formation into one playbook with the 500 play limit. And that changes things for a lot of guys because with all the different formations that people can have on the offensive side, you really need to be able to match up, but you also need to be able to change your looks. And if you're just rolling with a default 3-3-5 or 4-2-5, there's only so many plays you can call without repeating things. So it really limits you. Secondly, I think people are starting to realize that you can't force throws in this game. I know with my game with Holmey, you know, again, I threw two pick sixes. They were backbreakers. Both of them were in his end of the field. They were 70 plus yard pick sixes. So, and they were plays where I should have just, one of them, I should have just eaten the ball. The other one, I hit the wrong button. You've really got to take care of the football in this game because with the speed disparity, if you do throw an interception, I would be interested to see how many interceptions have not been taken back for touchdowns. I think there's been quite a few that have gone the other way. And then I think the third thing is that, look, especially with the younger guys that have time, you're seeing a lot of people watching their opponents' games. And I think the streaming changes how we approach these games. I think you're seeing a lot of scouting. I know I've talked to multiple coaches in the league who said they went and scouted their next opponent. They went and watched the replays. And I think because of that, you're going to start seeing guys picking up on tendencies. They're going to start seeing who you like to throw the ball to, which side of the field you like to run to, what formations you like to do play action out of. And I think it's going to keep these scores coming down because people are going to start countering each other out.
No, that is interesting because I did get the comment from Mark and Brady, who will be our game of the week, Oregon State, say that we don't need more people scouting us. And they were joking a little bit, but it is interesting now with the Twitch streams and it all out there. Like, you know, guys can go back and watch film. So it gives you even more of a strategy play, you know, to maybe not show your full hand early on in the season, right? Or not, or it forces you to mix up things a little more than maybe you normally would, trying different playbooks, trying different formations and things like that. So that is an interesting wrinkle that we, you know, necessarily didn't have 10 years ago. So yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, I was texting my buddy T Wade, Eastern Michigan, and he played Colorado and I got Colorado in a couple weeks, trying not to look too far ahead. I got, you know, another game before that, but kind of asked him, hey, what's your instant reaction? And, you know, right away he was like, hey, great player. It's up on my Twitch stream if you ever want to go back and watch it. So it's going to be interesting when that factors in, how in-depth are guys going to get on scouting reports and rewatching film and stuff like that. It's taken NDL to the next level, that's for sure.
And to that point, you know, you look at Big Mike and Missouri's game against Dealer in Miami. The final score was 28-24. There weren't any points scored in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are two teams that can put up points. There are two owners that can put up points. There were only two touchdowns in the third quarter and nobody scored in the fourth. So, I mean, as guys get more used to the defensive side of the ball and we start to get further into the game, I think we're going to see scores be more realistic. But the other part of this too, to keep in mind is, again, it's early. We've got guys playing the game that haven't played, you know, some of these guys haven't ever played Madden or they haven't played in years. I know I haven't played Madden in, I think, 3 years. So it's a learning curve in that aspect of we're trying to remember, you know, how to read coverages and how to figure out based on alignment with the safeties and things like that. And the other part of that is, too, guys who are used to doing that have to adjust to the fact that you can disguise that kind of coverage within the pre-snap playbook. You can go into nickel formation, for example, set your alignment to cover 0 or cover 4, and run a cover two. And so a lot of the habits that are ingrained in us from years and years and years of playing NCAA football and knowing, okay, well, I see a single high safety and it's not man alignment, that's going to be a cover three. Well, not necessarily anymore. So again, I think as we get further in, interceptions will come down, defenses will start countering the offense a bit more, and we'll start seeing some lower scores.
Yeah, I've been just taking more sacks or throwaways. That's something I used to do anyway, but I had to retrain and program myself to do that. And you make a good point. I was playing a scrim yesterday, and that got the best of me. Was thinking like, oh, I got this play read, and you know, pre-snap I had it read. Well, the second I snapped the ball, it was a quick slant, and I did not have it read correctly because they were showing a different defense, and that's just one of the things. Yeah, like you said, you gotta really not always, you know, be I would say trigger happy or, you know, wanting to go down the field when it's like, well, that's not going to work in this game, and turnovers will really crush you. So
I think I've called more checkdowns in my first two games than I did in entire years of previous NCAA games, because I never had to look for the running back leaking out or the tight end leaking out. Now I know who my checkdown is before the snap, because I know it's very likely I'm going to have to use them.
Yeah, and I think right from there, we can go into a segue, we'll talk about week three and week four. Holme has the games of the week up. I'm looking at the matchups. We got Texas versus Clemson. I think there was a little bit of talk, too, in the chat about Texas and Ohio State being highly ranked and not having any games in. I will step in for Texas and say they didn't have any games on their schedule for week one and two. So they're just a great team, and I put them up there by rankings. Then we got West Virginia and Kansas. That should be a great game. We got Memphis and SMU, kind of an old AAC rivalry. And then we have Oklahoma and Tennessee. And then, of course, we'll talk a little more about Oregon State, Oregon. But, Jason, of those games, which one is the most interesting to you?
I think it's Memphis SMU, because those are two really good coaches in Steamroller and Big Red, and they're putting up numbers on offense. I think this could be an extremely high-scoring game. They're also two of the best group of five teams in terms of talent on the roster. And, you know, SMU's ranked, so this is, I think Memphis should be ranked top 25 as well. But this is going to be a really, really good game. And then West Virginia and Kansas, we could have 500-plus rushing yards in that game. You've got one of the most unstoppable running backs in the game in Devin Neal on Kansas's roster. And then Shell's out here running. I had the stats written down. His running back, Jaheim White, against Virginia Tech, 26 carries, 257 yards, and four touchdowns. So this could be a race to 300 rushing yards becomes the winner in this one.
Yeah, that's the game, selfishly, I'm going to keep the biggest eye on, because I believe I play both of them. And with a seven and a half win goal, I kind of forgot that, like, hey, when you schedule non-conference games, those also change your win goal. A lot of learning to do, but no, that's going to be a great game. You know, you mentioned Memphis and SMU. You know, Memphis played Clemson real close in week one. I think they just played that game today, if I'm not mistaken. So that should be a fun game. You know, Oklahoma, I don't think we've seen them on the board yet, but Tennessee did have a big upset win at Michigan, I believe, to start their NDL. It's a new coach over at Tennessee. Be interesting to see, like, okay, now we're starting to see some conference games pop up. Obviously, we'll have some non-conference ones yet as well as we get into this block. But, West Virginia, Kansas, I think you hit it right on the head. That's going to be a heck of a game, just based on what I've seen the first two games out of each of them. Let's talk about Oregon State, Oregon. This is going to be, like we said, that Manning cast primetime matchup that we're gonna try to do here in the league. And you know, I think Mark's off to a great start. He had a close win and then a pretty big win, and then Oregon State, new coach, but I think he is a buddy of someone in the league. Someone knows him, and he's off to a hot start as well. So Jason, give us kind of like your breakdown or preview of what you're thinking on this game.
I'm shocked that neither one of them have thrown an interception. You know, there's very few players in this league, I think, at this point that haven't thrown a pick. and the two of them combined have attempted almost 80 or over 80 passes, and there's no interceptions. So we could have a very clean game in terms of turnovers. Oregon obviously has more talent, but you're on the road, and Oregon State's not an easy place to play in the game. It's a rivalry game, so I'm sure I would love to see if EA adds to the crowd atmosphere in rivalry games. I don't know if that's something that they've coded into the game, but it wouldn't shock me if they do. So, how will home field advantage play into this one?
I think it's going to be a fun game. I'm excited to call it and be on it. Weeks 3 and 4, we're already seeing games pop up. We won't talk about too many scores, but credit to you guys for getting off to a hot start. I could tell a lot of you guys were just chomping at the bit here to start playing games today, which is exciting. Obviously, rain is off to a great start with Notre Dame. And we'll talk a little bit of top 25 here. So looking at the top 25, Jason, I think most of the teams in there are pretty close to what they were last week. Obviously, we had some big names fall out, some big brands. But what do you see in the top 25? And I guess what's your breakdown from what you've seen?
I mean, as I predicted last week, Missouri wasn't going to be further down the rankings for long. They've moved up to 4th. Big Mike is Big Mike. Again, I asked the question, how the hell did we let him get Missouri? But that's neither here nor there. Iowa up to 10th. That's a team that I didn't have on my radar at all coming into the season to be a top 25 team, and now they've broken into the top 10. I think West Virginia should be higher. I had them 10th in my poll. They're 25th against Shell. Before the season, I had him in the top 25. He breaks in with his rule-breaking performance against Virginia Tech. Again, Shell, stop breaking the 35-point rule, man. We saw you. Him being barely in the top 25, I think he should be much higher. And then Georgia Tech, will they be able to stay in the top 25 with their quarterback and running back suspended for 4 games? That's going to be interesting. The one surprise for me was Miami completely dropping out. And I get it. They started 0-2. But one of those losses was by less than a touchdown in Missouri. And, right. Dealer's still a good coach. I figured he would still be in the fringe of the top 25, but to completely drop out, I think I had him, let me see here. I think I had him 23rd or so. So I had him still in the top 25. But completely drops out as people are, I wonder how many people are just looking at the records and not necessarily, who did you lose to?
Yeah, I think, it is a daunting task to go through every single team on there and see who they beat. I think a lot of guys do go off of memory. I try to do some research as I can, but I also don't want it to take me a full hour to put it in every week. But I think the ones that surprised me were Tennessee. Yeah, obviously, big win against Michigan, but I thought 8 was really, really high. Again, no discredit to a new coach, but I think that was just one game. And then Iowa being 10th, again, no discredit, great coach, 2 big wins. It's going to be interesting. We'll see a lot of this top 25 naturally even out as you go through it, or as we go through the season. But I think there's no surprise. Go ahead.
The Iowa win doesn't surprise me as much, just because if you can put up 70 points in 2 games with the lack of skill playmakers that they have at certain positions.
Yeah.
I don't have the roster pulled up, but I think we went over it last week. I think they have like 1 wide receiver rated over 75 or something like that. I mean, if you can go out and put up 70 points, you're a good player. Like, you are a really good player if you can put up those kinds of numbers. Now, granted, I don't know how, I didn't look through the box score to see, were some of those pick sixes or things like that.
Right.
But if they are, again, that their defense is phenomenal. So when you beat your rival by 34, that's a statement.
Statement, exactly. And I mean, I'm looking at the top two. There's no argument for me there. Even 3 with Oregon being up there, but Georgia 1 obviously dominated both games. And then Rain, again, don't mean to talk about 3 and 4 because we talk about that next week, but he's already 4-0, as we speak on this podcast. So no surprise there that he's in that top two. And then, we'll see what Ohio State does. We'll see what Texas does now that they have some games on the schedule. Not surprising to me, obviously, this top 25 is going to be bigger brands. It's going to be major conference teams. My prediction is next week we'll start to see some smaller schools sneaking in there. Saw UMass was pretty high receiving votes. Houston was up there as well. I know it's not a small school or a small conference, but I think as we get along here, you'll start to see some love for those group of five teams starting to pop into the rankings as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then one thing I want to talk about too, we skipped over it, or I guess I skipped ahead a little bit, but there was some game of the weeks that you had listed out there, Jason, for weeks 3 and 4 that maybe didn't make this list of five. Is there any games out there that you're really intrigued about that we didn't talk about or that are not on that big five list?
I think Baylor, Colorado is going to be a very interesting one. A lot of playmakers on both sides. You've got a new coach in Baylor who's putting up some numbers, so it'll be interesting to see with that one. And then NC State Clemson for me. And we didn't want to have Clemson being in there twice, but I think that's going to be a really good game, somewhat of a rivalry. And then another NC State game, them in Coastal Carolina. Two really, really good games. There are so many games this week that I want to watch. I mean, you've got USC Tennessee, you got USC Michigan. Boise State, Liberty, Illinois, Nebraska. Like, there are a bunch of really good games that might go under the radar. I don't know. I'm not going to have time to watch any of them probably hardly at all with my writing schedule this week, and it kind of sucks, but I'm definitely going to have to try to go back and catch some on replay when I have time.
Yeah, I think one that I wrote about here as the Mountain West Conference Commissioner is Colorado State and Colorado. And I know you just mentioned Colorado, but Colorado State is no joke. Win at Washington. I think they just had another big win as well. That coach, and sorry, I don't have the name in front of me, looking good, and that should be a fun game, Rocky Mountain Showdown rivalry game. But I think you said it, man. There's so many good games this week. It's going to be hard to keep up. You know, one game that we really like, too, is Georgia Tech and Nebraska. You know, obviously not a big name game. Nebraska is a big brand, but, you know, it'll be interesting to see what that Georgia Tech coach does or how he does with the suspensions that were handed out. And I'll give him all the credit. He's taken it super gracefully and leaned into it. And, you know, glad he's able to stay and be part of this league because he's a heck of a player. So I will put a bow on it and we'll move on to our guest. We'll take a quick pause here as we get him in the lobby, but we're going to bring on Rain. So stay with us and we'll be right back. All right, we are back and we have a very special guest with us today. Our second guest of the podcast this season. We were just talking about him in the top 25, Mr. Number 2, Mr. 4-0. Rain on you. Rain, how are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, excited to have you. Appreciate you agreeing to come on and do this with us. I think you've kind of gotten the reputation here with Nidler coming on our podcast a couple weeks ago as the data guy, the guy who kind of makes sense of everything that's going on in the game. So tell us, how did that start? When did you become the data guy and the guy who was testing everything out for us?
Well, you know, so professionally, I work in finance and analytics, so I'm always doodling in Excel, and from the point of view of just running previous leagues, being involved with OATP, you know, everybody wants to have a STEM environment, and to get things STEM, you kind of got to look at, you know, what are we producing versus what's out there in the real world, and can we get it to line up? With games, that's not always the case, unfortunately, because you're working with the limitations that the game gives you, and you're working a bit with human nature. So we just try to do the best we can to line them up.
Well, it's been great so far. You know, nice to let the NDL coaches and people in this league know that we're not necessarily just shooting from the hip on everything that we decide to do. There is some method and madness behind it all. So again, appreciate you doing that for us. Let's talk a little bit about you and your history with the NDL. You know, tell us, when did you get started, and what's your story, through NDL, you know, in the last, you know, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. So I'm probably an interesting case, because I'm not your prototypical old time vet. I came through the ENDL my first time in season two. I was playing a lot of ranked lobbies, you know, two or three versions of the game. My focus was try to sit in the top 100, and I think, you know, I got pretty close to the top 20 at one point playing NCAA online. My first stint in the NDL in season two was kind of in and out. The NDL really wasn't for me. I was doing a lot in my personal life, you know, actively sports and stuff being gone in the evenings. And I just wanted to dip in, get the competition in, get out. A few years went by and, you know, started to get more free time, started to want a more mature game. And I found myself working my way back through the farm and getting involved in the NDL again. And kind of been here ever since, you know, settle in and, you know, enjoy the way things are done here. I think it's a nice balance of competitiveness. And it's also, you know, it's a little more than just a game. It's a bit of a gaming community, right? We do a lot more than just NCAA over the years.
You know, you use the word mature, and I think that's a word that I haven't even thought of, but I think it perfectly sums up, you know, the NDL experience, and as our guy says, the NDL difference is having that maturity. And this is a more mature way to play the game, because it's, you know, you play online, you play in the lobby, and it's trying to outdo your opponent, not in terms of X's and O's, but in terms of exploiting issues with the game. And I'm curious, you know, for you, how you've seen the adaptation, especially for some of the newer guys, as being one of the conference commissioners and everything, of how some of the newer guys have adapted their gameplay already. Because I know we've coached guys already. We've kind of told them, hey, you know, this is frowned upon. What have you seen so far with some of the newer guys, and how well they're taking the coaching and adapting to the maturity that's needed for this league?
I've had a lot of positive conversations with the people that I've talked to. You know, we did have the one issue last weekend that unfortunately was a Big Ten player, someone that I'm a commit for. I did have a conversation with them, and, you know, I could tell that they were young. They were not really mature from the sense of being where we need them to be to play here, and it ended like it did, and that coach was replaced. The one thing that I think we have to be careful of when we talk about the play of new players and being lobby ball, and, you know, we joke because they don't even know what the lobby and lobby ball mean. You know, they play competitive.
East lobby, west lobby.
Right. So you have to understand that there's levels to competitive Madden, because that's the scene that these guys have seen for the past 10 years. And I've played in, you know, quite a few Madden leagues over the last few years, so I've got to see how dark it can be. I want to be clear that from what I've seen in the NDL, we don't have any extreme lobby ball players. The guys that are, you know, out there buying the ebooks off of YouTube, that are running an entire offensive scheme out of one set and have two unstoppable defensive plays, there's nobody here that's on that level. What we're bridging the gap on are the guys that probably didn't want to play with lobby ball players, you know, per se, the really bad ones, but they still have some habits that exist that are similar to those players. And we're trying to bring them fully in to the Sims style of play. You know, they might have 6 money plays in their bag, and out of the 48 plays that they're going to run all game, they're going to run those 6 plays 3 times each. And you know, that's a pretty big percent of your playbook. So it's kind of getting away from that level and taking it to the true sim style that we're looking at.
You know, you talked about the fact that you've played Madden. What kind of a difference is the game for you? Because I know what it is for me, but for you, what's the difference that you've seen between how you have to play and how you have to approach this version of NCAA versus the old versions, and how much has playing Madden helped you with that?
I mean, this isn't a whole lot different than, you know, somebody going away at the point that we had flip phones for cell phones and coming back to having a brand new iPhone and not understanding what happened in between. The things that were developed in Madden that didn't exist in NCAA or that were just in their infancy are now a massive portion of the way that NCAA plays today. And I've cautioned other commissioners and vets in the league that you're going to have an open mind here, because things that we would have said are, oh, that's, you know, that's kind of cheesy to run that play. You know, I know we got in a conversation privately about throwing downfield on a screen pass, right? That's a no-no. It's always been a no-no. You don't do it. But there are some read screens that don't have a specific singular primary receiver. The game's different, and we have to understand that not only has the video gaming world changed, not only are there so many new tools that came about from Madden into NCAA, that's also happened in the real world. If you look at the way that college football is played today versus how it was played in 2014, 2015, it's night and day.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Go ahead. I was going to say, just to tack on that, I mean, I'm still having to tell myself anytime I run an option play, okay, if he dives, hit X. If he dives, I literally have to repeat it to myself like four times because I'm just so ingrained, so much muscle memory from the old college football game. But I mean, that's a great answer.
Yeah, you make a lot of great points, Rain. Like, I'm not even that old of a vet either. I think I joined season 16, and so it looks like you were 15 the year before me, with obviously the season, you know, season two up there. But like, we're not trying to be old man yells at clouds, and I use that saying a lot, right? Like, we need to understand that the game is different, and that it's not going to be perfect necessarily like it was in the past. So I think what I've noticed is we're coming to a good medium of, hey, this is the way we play the game in the NDL. We don't take advantage of this, this, and that. But hey, we have to realize that the game is different and that there's a fun way and a sim style of play within this new game that we have in front of us. So wanted to kind of segue that into, we talk about, hey, everyone's success back in the old game, right? The, you know, 12, 13, 14 NCAAs. You had some great seasons before this, but you've really seemed to find something that's working for you. Without giving us a scouting report on yourself or giving us all the secrets to your game, what are you seeing that you really like about this game? And I guess, how have you found success so far?
Oh, I'll say this, I'm not going to hide a whole lot of stuff from everybody. I'm about as open as it gets when it comes to my gameplay. I'll jump on the mic, I'll scrim with you, I'll lab with you, I'll tell you what I'm seeing. I'll help you if you have questions. Because for me, I'm kind of at the point in my life, like, you know, winning will be great, but I really want to have fun. And there's no fun in me coming out and going up 28-0, 35-0 in the first half, and then running dive left, dive right for the rest of the game and being bored out of my mind. I want that chess match. I want that competition. So, you know, first of all, come talk to me. I would love to hang out, to play and talk the game with you. As far as what I'm seeing, I think in my NDL career, I was never super serious about the game in the NDL. I had little objectives, things that I wanted to do, and it was probably, you know, obviously I was trying to get better. But when I switched over and started playing Madden around 2018, 2019, I got pretty serious with the game and really started to understand how the game works, how it does what it does, how to, you know, properly counter a lot of things that were out there, and really took my football knowledge that I have out in the real world, apply it in here, but also do so in a way that it applies to video game logic too, right? So for me, I run a really balanced attack. I have two running backs right now with Notre Dame that I call them Thunder and Lightning. One of them hits a little harder, one of them's a little faster, a little more shifty. And to be honest, you know, running behind the Notre Dame offensive line is fairly simple. So I let the big guys do the work. I stay behind the block. It is a different world. And, you know, are we having this conversation if I picked at, you know, number 100 or 120? Probably not, right? I may be doing well, but it wouldn't stand out like this has, because I've been kind of put in the spotlight with the team that I have. So, you know, I guess the best thing that I could tell you is know what the capabilities of your team are. Do not force passes, no matter what. Understand, you know, one of the big differences is you can't throw under pressure. So if you're got a defensive end being, you know, pushing a tackle into you, that's going to be an inaccurate pass when you fire the ball, 100%. So you've got to bring it down. Don't be afraid to run. Don't let somebody rush three on you all game. I know people are going to freak out hearing me say that, but defenses have to be punished for their choices too. So make your reads, proper progressions, and then do what you would do in real life. You know, I think that's acceptable.
Yeah, and I think, oh, sorry, I thought you were excited.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that's a really great point too, because we have talked, you know, in privately to coaches and in the, you know, in the announcements of, you know, don't take off running. And I think that's a really important distinction to make for the newer guys is we're not saying you can't run with the quarterback, but do it realistically. There are very few quarterbacks in the league and that are good quarterbacks or in college football that they're going to look at one read and then take off, or they're rolling out in anticipation of taking off. Like you said, if somebody rushes three or even four and, you know, the defensive ends rush upfield and the defensive tackles lose containment on the middle, take 5-10 yards and get down. You know, that's realistic if you've looked through the defense. But you're spot on with the throwing under pressure. It's a habit that I'm trying desperately to break. You know, you talk about games not being as serious to you anymore. I'm kind of the same way. Like if I play FIFA, I'm insanely competitive. I want to beat you no matter who you are. With this game, like I played home the other night, I lost. I had fun. I walked away. You know, was like that was a fun game even though I lost. But one thing that's helped me is switching the camera angle and going to what I think is basically as close to the all 22 as you can get. It's helped me a lot with exactly what you're talking about with not being pressured, with seeing the field better, and with being able to make better decisions and trying to cut down on interceptions. What are the things that you have had to adapt to your gameplay, whether it's just this year or in the past, to ensure that you don't force those throws?
So you brought up a good one there with the all 22 camera. If you watch any of my streams, you'll see that I don't play with a stock camera. And in fact, I will flip the camera around based on certain scenarios. So for instance, the camera that I'd run from is different than the camera that I pass from. And I will use multiple cameras when I'm defending as well, depending on down distance situation and who I'm going to control. You know, I'll cycle this back to something you mentioned here earlier in the podcast was that we now have Twitch to go scout your opponents, right? So you have the advantage to go learn about what your opponent's going to do, but you also have the advantage to go to my stream, go to Tame's stream or, you know, Big Mike and look at what they're doing. And you can look, you know, don't just look at the play calls. Don't look at the formations. That's the obvious stuff, right? Everybody's going to fall in to the plays that are going to tend to work. I don't know what those will be yet consistently, but you can trust that within a certain band, the playbooks are going to run kind of the same. You're going to see the same open routes because eventually they're the meta, right? The most effective technique available or whatever it stands for. But what you got to look at is the little thing, right? So if you were to look at my stream, for instance, my first time in on defense, you're going to see me going in and you're going to see me subbing defensive linemen. And I'm doing this before the play's even called because I have a specific formation. I know that I need to move some defensive linemen around. So I sub them. And then I maybe flip some linebackers in a second formation. And I'm doing that because I want Jack Kaiser in a position and Jalen Sneed somewhere else for coverage purposes. It's when you start picking up on those nuances, that's where the differences are made. So when I'm trying to cover a certain middle read zone, I don't have a linebacker in that zone with low awareness. I have Jack Kaiser there, and I can trust Jack Kaiser to make a play. Those are the differences when you get into high-level play.
Must be nice to have defenders who can you can cycle in and out like that. I'm just sitting here going, okay, do I have anybody who's faster than 85 on the field? Nope. Okay.
It's something that I've kind of picked up on a little bit here over the past few games that I've played is using those defensive line subs, especially when your guys are yellow and red, tired or, you know, risk injury in there. But then also like using those badges to your advantage too, like knowing what your quarterback's badges are, knowing what your running back's badges are. There's been times where I'll sub in my running back, my backup, who is also like a quote unquote impact player for my team. And I'll put him in a situation where I should have my speed guy out there. And it's like, well, he's more of a bruiser than he is a speed guy. And it's like, well, I shouldn't be running off tackle with him. I should be running up the middle with him. So it's a good point you make about just kind of knowing your personnel and knowing your players and starting to play the game or adjust your game plan based on their strengths. Because if you're trying to go, you know, deep threat to a guy that's not a deep threat, it's probably not going to go super well.
I have one last question for you, Farain, and I think this is your 15th season now. Looking back, you've had 14 different teams. Is that something that is going to change now that you've got Notre Dame? And what has been your strategy in the past? Has it just been kind of wanting to play with different teams, or has it been a thing of, you know, just wanting to take your chances in the draft after each season?
So my initial article that I posted when we completed the draft, you'll see if you go back to that article, you know, talked about Coach Rain signs with Notre Dame. The picture on that article has a license plate. It is an Ohio license plate. It has a Notre Dame logo on it. And on it, it has PLACT, Play Like a Champion Today. That is my personal license plate. From my vehicle there.
Probably shouldn't post that in a public forum, but
you can find license plates everywhere, guys.
So what you're saying is I'll never get Notre Dame, because that's my team. That's who I've always been a fan of. I'm a season ticket holder. I'm going to the A&M game here in a couple weeks. So you're saying I'll never get them, basically.
Well, I'm not saying that, right? Because keeping Notre Dame is not an easy task. Obviously, you know, you're going to have some tough outs on the schedule with, you know, Florida State, with USC. And I wasn't shy this year. I came out of the gate with Alabama. I didn't know what I was going to get into. I knew that he was scrimmaging like crazy and preparing for the season. So that could have been a tough one right away. And I still have a startup Georgia Tech team. You know, we talked about him earlier that he was a bit of a surprise. And even though he's got players on a 4-game suspension, guess who he plays in 5 games?
The fifth game.
You got it. So I'm sure he's going to be ready to roll. When you're at the top, everybody's gunning for you. You know, you asked about why did I always switch teams. I wanted to get to Notre Dame, and I knew I was probably never going to be there. But I always wanted to ensure that I was in a good draft position, just in case Notre Dame couldn't be retained or the coach that had them for a rather long time opted to step away. As you may recall, they don't announce what teams will be available before you make your decision. It all happens at once. So that's part of, you know, going into the draft a bit blind, was like, will they be there? Will they not? That's kind of why I bounced around. But in most of those seasons, I had pretty solid draft spots, which is why you consistently see decent teams.
I think it's going to be very interesting. You look at how the calendar kind of plays out. We're going to get through almost the entire regular season before we get to the opening day of college football. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how much Notre Dame changes from what you have in the regular season, and a lot of teams, what you have in the regular season versus what you have come postseason, because that's when we're going to start getting the live roster updates. That's when Georgia's going to see half their team go to Prison U. So, I mean, there's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out, because we're not going to have many of those changes over the first 10 weeks of the season.
So did we ever confirm this? Because I've been asking. Now, I live updates, that's one thing. But injuries, like, are they going to take a player off the game because they get injured in real life? Like, is that going to be a thing with this game?
I don't know that they'll take them off, but they might do what they do in Madden, which is where they give them, you know, minus 50 rating or something like that. It's not that drastic, but they hammer their rating to where you can still play them, but they're basically gutted. I mean, it's just like playing a guy who's severely injured. That's the other thing they might do too for, you know, for the default rosters. They might put, if a guy's kind of, you know, he's day to day with a hamstring injury, they might set it to where you start a game and play now or play online or play a friend to where he's at high risk of an injury.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I mean, I hope they don't do that. You know, just really for anybody. I mean, obviously for myself selfishly, if one of my players gets hurt, I don't want him out, but I don't think anybody would. So that could be an interesting wrinkle to the league and to the roster. But anyway, Rain, we could talk to you for an hour or two. I know you got some stuff to get to tonight. I have a game coming up as well, and Jason's got his House of the Dragon to get to here in a few minutes. So thank you for joining us, man. We appreciate it. It's been a great time, and we look forward to seeing what you can do at Notre Dame this season.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm going to be tuned in on Tuesday watching Oregon and Oregon State. Being the Big Ten commissioner, I have a I got my heart over there with Oregon. However, I have played in Madden leagues with Brady for the past few years, know him rather well, and I've also got a little bit on that side of the battle as well. So it's nice. Going to be a good one, guys. Hope everybody tunes in.
Awesome. Well, should be fun, man. Thanks again for joining us. That'll do it for our fourth episode of the NDL podcast. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next week.